All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It's That Park Place, the place that is fun, fun, fun. All the news that should be fun right here at www.thatparkplace.com. Today, I am joined with Lauren Connor, our Star Wars guru, who has been reviewing each episode of the Obi-Wan Kenobi series on Disney+. The series is done. It's over. Well, at least the first season. We don't know yet if there will be additional seasons. It seems to me that it was a standalone in the beginning, but now there is some talk, even coming from Kathleen Kennedy, that they may be pondering a second season, whatever that may involve. And so we're here with Lauren Connor today, and Lauren has finished up all of the six episodes. So, Lauren, welcome aboard, and can you just tell us, since you've seen the entire thing now, what are your thoughts on the quality? Give us sort of a mini review of Obi-Wan Kenobi season one and potentially Obi-Wan Kenobi period. It may be all that there is.
I think this is probably going to be the most frustrating series that Disney has produced that I will have to talk about. In some ways, even more so than the Book of Boba Fett. I think the Book of Boba Fett is probably the worst series that they have produced, but Obi-Wan is probably going to be the most frustrating. And the main reason for that is there's actually a lot here to like. I don't think that you can say anything bad about the performances from Ewan McGregor, from Joel Edgerton, from Hayden Christensen. I think it was great to see all of them again. I think that they were acting their hearts out. On the other hand, there are portions of this series that have logical plot holes and places where the writers are asking you to just go along with them when you know that the plot points that they're putting on screen are going to cause problems. And you can get away with that as a writer if you are producing something for the audience that is better than what came before. But if you don't manage to pull that off, you're basically aiming a shotgun at the bottom of your boat and pulling the trigger. And I think that's what happened with Obi-Wan.
Now, I have heard from different people, very different responses to this series. And some people feel like this is an example that Disney might could do the right thing with Star Wars. I think the people who have that feeling are the people who can look over the inconsistencies between this series and the very first Star Wars movie, A New Hope. The people who don't mind if there are issues or retconning, the people who just want to have a good time, they seem to really like this. I take it that you're not the type of person who can just sort of look over those issues, those errors in continuity.
Well, I'd put it this way. What I was looking for out of the series was that Obi-Wan and Anakin be front and center in this series. And for me, there was one criteria that had to be met for this series to work. And that was that at the end, spoilers here, that Obi-Wan actually reach out to Anakin in such a way that he offered him a path back. And I think some people may kind of feel that he did that. He did offer an apology. He said, I'm sorry for this, Anakin, for all of it. And that's when Anakin slash Vader tells him that I'm not your failure. You didn't kill Anakin. I did. And that's a great line. That scene, I loved that entire scene. But I think there was probably a better way to do it. And ultimately, the way they did it was just a repeat at the end of Revenge of the Sith. And what that means is that this show didn't give us anything that we didn't already have. It just repeated the ending of Episode 3. Now, that's my major gripe with the show. But if that were the only issue with it, it would probably be okay. It's actually not my major gripe, even though that was the one thing that I needed to see. During the first, I thought the first episode of the series, honestly, I really enjoyed. I thought it was great. The second episode, I had a few misgivings. The third episode started to have some pretty large logical problems, but I enjoyed that, especially the introduction of Vader and the duel between him and Obi-Wan in that episode. I thought that was great, and I was willing to go along with it. And then the fourth episode hit. And that episode was a real gut punch to me. I felt that there was honestly no purpose to the episode whatsoever. It was a waste of time. And to me, they were just treading water. And that's when I really started to feel like they may be in some trouble here. To me, there were extraneous plot elements that were in the show that maybe could have been made to work. The path and the refugees were kind of an interesting idea, but I don't think that they really justified their position on screen. It was taking time away from the central drama between Obi-Wan and Vader. Even worse, when you get to this final episode, and honestly, it's the final episode that's the most maddening to me, because, like I said, I really enjoy the fight between Vader and Obi-Wan, even though I don't think that it gave us anything that we didn't already have. But when you have the absolute nonsense at the beginning of the episode with the Star Destroyer chasing the refugee ship and Obi-Wan deciding that he's going to leave, and the refugees are exclaiming, we're all supposed to stick together. Why are you doing this? He's the one that's put them all in danger. They've known him for like a day, and their lives are about to end. They should be glad to have him off that ship. Worse.
That's a great point.
When he actually leaves in the dropship, Vader and the Inquisitor have a conversation, and the Inquisitor is talking to Vader and saying, look, we've got to kill these refugees. If we destroy this path network, we can potentially end what could be the future rebellion. And Vader says, no, we have to follow Kenobi. And then they turn the Star Destroyer. Now, the Star Destroyer then launches Vader in a shuttle who follows Kenobi. Why does the Destroyer need to follow Kenobi? Vader's got a shuttle. It's got a hyperdrive. The Star Destroyer has a hyperdrive. They can easily destroy those refugees. They don't both have to follow Kenobi.
False dichotomy, then.
My God. And when I saw that, my head just almost exploded. But even that's not the worst of it. At the end of the series, because they made Leia a major focus of it, and I understand the dilemma they had there. They couldn't keep Obi-Wan on Tatooine. We've seen so much of Tatooine, we have to go somewhere else. They had to figure out a way to get him off of Tatooine. I don't have a problem with Leia per se. I don't have a problem with the actress. I do think that probably her part in the show should have been done right about episode 4. I don't think we needed any more of her after that. But the problem that is introduced with Leia is that the Empire now knows definitively that there is definitely a connection between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Bail Organa. At that point, why is the Organa family not arrested en masse? They already know that they have ties to the rebellion. They know that they have ties to Kenobi. If they want to figure out where Kenobi is, just arrest the whole family. It sort of obliterates the entire opening of A New Hope now, because when the Devastator disables the Tantive IV, Invader boards the ship. She's trying to carry out this flimsy ruse that she's on a diplomatic mission. And Vader says, if this is a diplomatic mission, then where's the ambassador? She has just left Scarif. He knows that she is involved in some activities she shouldn't be involved in. But the Senate still exists. It has not been abolished at that point in time until after Princess Leia is captured. And so they're kind of doing this little diplomatic dance where both of them know she's a part of the rebellion, but there's a question of legalities because there's still that vestige of the old Republic that exists. This series kind of blows all of that away, and I don't know how you paper over that.
Well, you know, it also has the issue of when Obi-Wan passes away in the duel with Darth Vader in A New Hope, the reaction by Princess Leia no longer makes sense in comparison to Luke's reaction.
I have less of a problem with that because, honestly, her reaction is about the same to the destruction of Alderaan.
Touche.
I've always looked at her as being more of a bigger picture person. She deals with tragedy really well because she knows that the fight is everything. And this kind of goes back to our previous conversation where I think that Lucasfilm in this modern era has missed the entire point of Leia. They want to make her a Jedi and say that she's just as good as Luke, when actually she has an entirely different role than Luke. Luke's role is the reestablishment of the Jedi Order. Leia's role is the reestablishment of the Republic. Both of those things have to be in place for order to be restored in the galaxy. And that's what her strength is leading people, being an inspiration. She is the angelic figure that causes people to want to follow her into the fight. And I feel like that's been missed in the modern era.
So before this series came out, there were a number of leaks. I would say 90% of those were exactly right. Mm-hmm. Those leaks centered around the character Reva. Mm-hmm. Having watched the entire series now, what is your take on that character? Did the character provide something new to the Star Wars universe? And is it worth pursuing that character? Absent of all of the intersectionality issues, absent of the different controversies that surrounded this series, just the character herself, does she have a path forward?
I'm going to answer you in a roundabout way. I had much less of a problem with Reva as a character, I think, than most people who are concerned about intersectionality did. And most of that is because she's a plot device. She's there just to create circumstances that move the plot forward. In that way,
they are not going to like you for saying that.
I know, but it's not because I have anything against the actress or her performance. And in fact, I actually really liked her performance. I thought she did a pretty good job. But in a story, you do have to have things that cause other things to happen in the plot. And she is that. And I think that that's perfectly fine. I don't have a problem with that. I do think that it's probably, it was a mistake to have her live past the stabbing in the fifth episode. Because, like many other commentators have mentioned, in that final fight between Obi-Wan and Vader, you want to focus on that. You don't want to keep cutting away to something else where you already know that Lucas survived. And it also introduces another continuity error, because I have a really hard time believing that Luke just escaped through that window in the garage without noticing the red glow coming down the hallway towards him. That's another pretty big, to my mind, plot hole. Do I think there's any worth in pursuing her character going forward? Not really. I think she served her purpose. On the other hand, I do think there's probably a lot of value still in exploring more with the Inquisitors. I don't think this series handled the Inquisitors well. I think they made them look cartoonish. I think they looked kind of cheap, and I think that they were largely overacted. However, I do think the Inquisitorius itself has an interesting niche in Star Wars history going back to the old EU. And I think when handled properly, like in Jedi Fallen Order, they can be scary and effective. I'd like to see something a lot more along those lines than what we saw in Obi-Wan. As for now, Moses Ingram, I think she did a fine job. I don't have any problems with the performance at all.
There seems to be a pattern that is beginning to emerge inside of Disney's Star Wars. And that pattern is that characters are treated in sort of a comic book fashion, in which they can be gravely injured in such a way as to make the audience believe that they have died, and then they reappear later on, and sometimes without the type of injury that you would have expected had they come that close to death. Yep. Do you think that's a plot device that's being overused now within Disney Star Wars?
Absolutely. I think you can get away with that maybe twice in any kind of major series. And if you do it beyond that, you start to unpin all of the stakes in your entire universe. And I think that we're in real danger of that occurring, which is another reason why I thought she should have died in that episode. At that point, had she died in episode 5, in a way, she would have had more potential as a character at that point, because now she's a tragic figure. Now she's somebody that secretly was a hero and died in the pursuit of justice. And now you can go back and tell stories about her past. What else was she doing during her time as an Inquisitor? You could have shown her cleverness in figuring out that there was a tie between Obi-Wan and Bail Organa. You could show her going into the archives and finding secret information that daughters hadn't figured out. There's a lot that you could do there. But now, because she survives, she's not so much a tragic figure as maybe now she would become something akin to a knight errant. I don't think that she would probably become a Jedi, but I don't really know where you go with her after this that would be particularly satisfying.
She's also out of place when it comes to where it seems that Star Wars is heading with the Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni series. So the timeline's not right. So you can't intermingle her with those characters quite as easily as you could with, say, an Ahsoka.
Well, I have some thoughts on that. I don't know how deeply we want to go into this. I have been talking about a series of articles that I would like to write and that I have started to work on a little bit. It's kind of an advice column to Lucasfilm about ways in which you can try and build goodwill now that things have soured so badly. It's kind of my take on this is something Lucasfilm will never do, but if you want to fix Star Wars, here's a bunch of good steps you can take. There have been rumors for quite some time about how the World Between Worlds could be used to retcon the sequel trilogy. And I know those rumors have been batted around for the last couple of years, and everybody has now kind of come to the conclusion that that's not going to happen. I think there is a way that it could happen that would allow potentially all parties to be satisfied, including sequel fans. I've heard some people talk of similar ideas, but one of the things that I haven't heard is how the World Between Worlds would be brought into this. How would it be used in such a way that you could change what has been done perhaps incorrectly while also satisfying those people who like those things that I would say were done incorrectly? And I think the key to that is, you notice on the Ahsoka show in the logo, a lot of the typography there looks an awful lot like the hieroglyphics that we saw in the World Between Worlds. So there's a tie there. We know that Ahsoka and Sabine are going to be going off looking for Ezra and Thrawn. I think that if you want to fix things, you eventually have to get to something that is pseudo-heir to the Empire. Now, we know that they're moving towards a live-action Thrawn. I think the reason that the World Between Worlds may come into play is because of Thrawn himself. His whole goal in joining the Empire was to protect the Chiss Ascendancy from the threat of the Grisk in the unknown regions. But the Empire fell, and what came after it was worse, the First Order. And when he sees that beginning to happen and realizes that this threat is going to be coming from his homeworld and there is no strong ally to now help him, he may be interested in finding a way to reverse the course of those actions. And if the sequel trilogy is predicated upon Palpatine being resurrected and they need Grogu's blood to do that successfully, that is the action that Thrawn could undo that would prevent the sequel trilogy from occurring after he makes that change. And in so doing, now that he has Grogu within his thrall, there are other potential cloning experiments that he could be engaged in. In, I think it was the fifth episode of The Mandalorian Season 2, when they went back to the lab on Navarro, there were cloning tanks that they saw there. And the clone that was floating in there was obscured, but looked an awful lot like Snoke, and a lot of people commented on that. If Favreau wants to fix that, he could easily retcon that after using the World Between Worlds to be Luke.
Ah, I see. Well, now that is an interesting theory. And as we've said before, that's why you are the Star Wars guru, putting all of this stuff together. I sort of hesitate to ask where you might go with some of the Grogu storylines, because it may accidentally be spoilers for all those people listening. So,
well, I got thoughts on that too, but they're not really all that different than I think probably a lot of people have had. So I am excited to see where that goes. I am dismayed to see that Babu Frick is going to be in Season 3, but I hold out hope that somehow they're still going to fix this mess. my hope is that after Indy 5, that Kathleen will take her bow and Favreau will be elevated. But I have to admit, after seeing what's happened with the Book of Boba Fett and seeing what's happened with Obi-Wan, my faith there is a little shaken too. I think
it's hard to say how much impact that Favreau had on Obi-Wan Kenobi. So,
yeah, but I think my fear here is that I do think that he is taking a larger role within the company. I think that his attention is divided, and I think that that's dangerous for the state of things where they are now. After Obi-Wan, in a way, I think the smartest thing that they may be able to do right now is go dormant for a period of years, and just let everything die down for a while. But the danger in doing that is that you don't have that core group of fans that's going to be nostalgic for this again in 10 years. You do have people who like the sequel trilogy, but they are not the critical mass that would cause the franchise to be revived again. So the problem that we have now is they have turned a cinematic property into a TV property, and the TV property is no longer must-see TV. That is a real danger spot for them to be.
That's because it became not must-watch theatrical releases as well. You remember that when Star Wars in its original forms, even through the prequels, there was something magical about that opening crawl and the sound of Star Wars opening up from John Williams. It was almost as if the epitome of cinema was being bestowed onto the audience, something that you would not experience anywhere else. It was like George Lucas had bottled up the essence of cinema and all of its grandeur. The problem is that Disney took that and turned it into something where, by the time we got to Solo, A Star Wars Story, people were no longer coming for that experience. Now, I think you are correct in assessing that whether or not Obi-Wan Kenobi was an average or above average or slightly below average series, it's no longer must-watch TV either.
Yeah. And that's why I think that this show may have done the most damage out of all of them. I can't help but feel there's so much in the series that I actually do like. I feel like there are individual scenes. If you could just cut out about half of the series and re-edit it in some way to remove the logical fallacies, I think you'd have a pretty good movie. But I think you'd get a pretty lousy series. And again, I hate harping on it because any time that Ewan or Hayden or Joel Edgerton were on the screen, I thought they were just crackling. I would love, if you were going to do a season two of Obi-Wan Kenobi, the two things that I would want to see is some of his education with Qui-Gon, which, by the way, also introduces some plot holes. But more than that, I'd almost kind of like to see something akin to a buddy cop movie with him and Owen going off on some adventure together. Every time Owen was on the screen, I just loved him. I thought that they were great together. So
other than that option, because they are talking about doing a second season, and the problem with doing a second season is that inevitably they're going to want to make it bigger than the first season. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's possible and still have this thing make sense with the broader Star Wars narrative.
Well, what I would challenge Disney to do is I think they actually need to start thinking smaller. Part of the reason that The Mandalorian worked was because it's brand new characters in brand new settings that have all of the trappings of Star Wars and everything that you want to see, and you're unfettered by the weight of legacy. I no longer trust Disney Lucasfilm with the legacy characters. I don't trust that they're going to handle them properly anymore. And so I know they feel like they got burnt when they tried to put their new characters front and center in the sequel trilogy, but there's a reason that they got burnt. They were disrespecting the legacy characters when they did it and trying to say that the new characters were better. You can still tell a good story with new characters in new situations, and you can do it for a lot less money. you don't have to have giant galactic stakes. In our last talk, I mentioned that I think in a way they didn't need a sequel trilogy. They needed a sequel epilogue. And I think if I was going to do that, the point of that would be having one character's destiny, just some minor character who's not particularly important in the galactic scheme of things, but his destiny to him matters and can matter to other people, even a great person like Luke Skywalker. And so I think Disney maybe should pay attention to that. Not everybody has to have a great destiny, but everybody does have a destiny, whether it's great or small.
So now, Lauren, let me throw you for a loop for a minute. Have you watched Stranger Things at all?
I have.
Millie Bobby Brown, there is talk about her being brought over to play in Star Wars and take the role of Princess Leia. Do you have any thoughts on that, especially after we had the Variety article in which Kathleen Kennedy suggested that they would not be recasting legacy characters with new actors?
Well, I'm taking the rumors with a bit of a grain of salt, just because
I think in this case, that's wise.
Yeah, rumors about her playing Leia have been floating around for years now because she bears such a striking resemblance to a young Carrie Fisher. That said, I think she's an amazing actress. I think she has the look. If you were going to cast a teenage Leia, I don't think that you need to talk to anybody else. She's the one that I would want to cast. However, also in that rumors, it talks about how close Millie Bobby Brown and Kathleen Kennedy are. That also gives me pause. Like I just said, I don't trust them with the legacy characters anymore. So
it makes me wonder how they became close. Like, what circles are there that?
I think that Kathleen's process throughout this entire last decade of producing these things has been to try to look for talent that's hot. That's what she did with all of the directors that she signed up and subsequently fired.
Great point.
One mistake that she has made, I think, as well, is that she kind of likes getting big-name actors into these roles, I think, because she thinks they're flashy. But that's not what the original Star Wars did. It took a bunch of unknowns, who, again, were cheap, and tested them for chemistry to see if they worked. And I think that she'd be a lot smarter to be doing that kind of thing. These were not unknowns, but I think the best part of the sequel trilogy was the chemistry between John Boyega and Oscar Isaac. Their chemistry in the Force Awakens, when they were escaping from the First Order Star Destroyer, was off the charts. I would have watched an entire trilogy of those guys just mucking around the galaxy.
Yeah, but another great point.
But that's not what we got. So I think that because she's not exactly a fan of Star Wars as a story or a universe, she's a producer. She's looking at this as, what's the easiest way that I can throw something out there that's going to make a lot of money? So she's looking for people that are hot, the it people of today. So I'm guessing that's probably how she became involved with Millie Bobby Brown. She's hot.
You know, the issue would be, though, that if she came from Stranger Things to Star Wars, and it's startling to say this, but it seems that Stranger Things is a larger, that's right, a larger, hotter franchise at this point than Star Wars. So yeah, who could have ever seen that coming even 5 years ago?
Yeah. You know, when I first really started getting involved with the fandom, I was heavily involved in buying replica props. I've got replica props from the movies all over my house. And I really learned through that where Star Wars really made all of its money was in the merchandising. It's not the movies, it's not the TV shows, it's not the books, it's not the comics, it's the toys, it's the props, it's the tie-in and licensed material. That stuff doesn't sell anymore. And that's how you know how badly damaged Star Wars is.
Yes. Except for Baby Yoda Grogu merchandise, which they will milk that character until the end of time.
I think they have to be careful with that, though, because you can only milk that so far. And I think they're almost to the limit of that. I think bringing Grogu back in the Book of Boba Fett and reuniting him with Mando was a tremendous mistake.
Oh, I agree. He should have stayed with Luke from the standpoint of where the narrative could have gone. There's no intrigue now. That the intrigue would have been off the charts going into the third season.
The place to bring him back would have been the finale of the third season. And I think what could have been interesting there is that you saw in that fifth episode of, I think it was the Book of Boba Fett, when we first see the Mando come into that shop with the Clatoonians, and he's looking for that one guy, and he takes his head, you know. He's got an edge that he hasn't had since the first episode of season one. He's angry. And that would have been fun to explore in a third season. If he had gotten back to bounty hunting while being pulled into the Mandalorian succession conflict with Bo-Katan and everything, something that he doesn't really want to be a part of, but isn't going to have a choice. It would have been interesting to see what a hard-edged Mandalorian looks like when he starts maybe going a bit too far, and how bringing Grogu back then mollifies him and gets him back to where he needs to be. And what a shock it would be if we see that when Grogu comes back, he's had a growth spurt. Maybe he's a teenager now.
Well, going the Groot route, or the Groot route. How's that?
Yeah, you know, we don't really know anything about the Yoda species, so they can age however we want.
That's right. Well, Lauren, it's been a fantastic conversation. I want to give you, though, the Picard versus Kirk kind of thing. Are you ready for that, for Star Wars?
You bet.
Here's the question, and I don't know if you've ever been asked this before, but there are two songs about Star Wars from infamous writer, musician, rock band leader, Weird Al Yankovic. One is Yoda, the other, The Saga Begins. Mm-hmm. Lauren, I need to know, which song is the greater?
Yoda, without question. And here's why. There's this line that makes me laugh every time I hear that song. It is, "I'll be making these movies till the end of time." And it turns
now
out,
you know where we segued.
It was right. True.
With my Yoda. Yeah, 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 Yoda. All right. Well, Lauren, it's been a fantastic conversation. We love the articles that you write. The readers love the articles that you write. And I'm looking forward to more conversations such as this. For all of you out there who are listening in, we thank you very much. We hope that you'll continue to come to That Park Place, the place where the news should be fun. Make sure to put us on your favorites and keep checking back day to day. Lauren, anything to wrap up with?
No, just I appreciate all of the readers and comments, and I look forward to talking to you all again soon.
All right, drop a comment. Lauren is great about responding. I try to from time to time. So do the other writers. We make sure to read them all. So let us know, and let's make this into a dialogue with all of you. Everybody have a great day, and may the Force be with you, maybe even more than it is with Disney.